Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Truth Is, our second episode. Happy Monday to all. Charity, are you there? Sorry, guys, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties. Just give us a couple seconds to get it together. But today we're going to be talking about the phobias of counseling, of seeking mental health services. Let's just wait until Charity gets on. We're going to pause for one quick second. Here we go. Are we there?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we're in. Thank you. Sorry, guys, for the technical difficulties. It's going to take a couple episodes for us to be smooth and running, but welcome again.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone, to The Truth Is. Today our topic will be about the phobias of counseling in our community. We just want to kind of talk and elaborate and give you some pointers on, you know, who you can go to, you know, what places are available, and just, you know, open up the dialogue about it. Are you there, Keyslin?
Absolutely. So,
go ahead.
So, you know, we felt like this is an important topic to bring to the community at large and the public, just because there are so many people who are in need of services and, you know, they don't access them for several reasons, and that's kind of what we want to talk about, just the fears. And sometimes it's not just fears, it's just actually not knowing how to start and where to start. So we kind of just want to have a conversation about that today. And to minimize some of the fears that a lot of people feel by sharing our own personal experiences with seeking services, not for only ourselves, but, you know, for family members and also myself being a therapist, also from that angle, knowing what it's like for families to reach out for help.
And for those who are tuning in for your first time, like we said before, this is our second show, but we want to kind of give you a brief reason for starting the show, and it's because we felt compelled to do something about all the negative coverage that is shown in our community toward Black people, you know, showing us committing crimes, not taking care of our children, not wanting to work, you know. They have those bases covered, and we felt like that we should do something positive, shine a positive light on our community, show people that are working, that are law-abiding citizens, that are paying their taxes, trying to do something positive in their life and, you know, taking care of their children and starting businesses. And, you know, it's our job to build our community. We can't leave it in the hands of anyone else. So with that being said, I just wanted to talk about something that I had personal issues with myself. You know, I'm not going to say I had a problem with getting counseling, but as a young child, you know, a lot of people in my family wanted me to keep secret that, you know, I was really too young to be keeping, and
mm-hmm.
and since I saw other people doing it, I just went on and did it without even really thought of doing it, not knowing, and people not paying enough attention to me, saying that I really needed to get some counseling for things that happened to me as a child. So it wasn't until I was like 28 years old that I found out that I had been suffering from depression pretty much yeah. my whole life,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't even know it.
So yeah, I think one of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Yeah, I think that for a lot of times, for a lot of us, not just for therapy, but, you know, seeking help and asking for help is a sign of weakness. So I think that's usually the fear that keeps people from actually reaching out for help. And also, just the, you know, the fear of actually sharing things with people that you, or a person that you don't know. I mean, that's pretty
yeah.
scary. And for parents, you know, reaching out for help means that I'm not able to control this issue. And I think that's scary for people to feel like they're not in control. And that's usually
Definitely.
Where people stop.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, when you're talking about a child getting counseling, of course, it's going to start with the parents, because you have to be able to have a good relationship with your child, or you have to be observing your child and seeing, you know, things that you know, your child should be getting help for. It. It's going to take the parent. I mean, and you know, we can fool other people, but we can't fool ourselves. You know when something isn't right. You know when you're having anxiety, or, you know, you may be shaking, or, you know, whatever. You know yourself. So, I mean, there is nothing wrong with saying, I need help, because no matter who you are, what position you hold, how much money you have, we all need help.
Yes, ma'am. And then the other part about, you know, for people in our communities is the cultural piece that really is a conflict with reaching out for help. You know, what happens in our house stays in our house. Certain cultural, you know, beliefs such as that keeps us in a box where we feel like it's not the norm to go talk to someone. That's just for rich people, or that's just for people who will really have issues. And, you know, to be honest, therapy could be for something as extreme as suicidal ideations or depression, or something mild as, you know, my dog died or my parents are getting divorced. Not saying that's mild, but it doesn't have to be something that's so extreme, like you have, you know, that you're psychotic. And I think a lot of times people associate mental health or counseling with somebody who's psychotic and quote-unquote crazy, and that's just not the, you know, reality of the situation.
Definitely. We have to get rid of these stigmas, you know, things that we just really come up with in our own minds, because just because a person is reaching out for help or, you know, seeking a psychiatrist or a counselor, it doesn't mean that you're crazy. It doesn't mean that you're going to snap, you know. It's just always good to have somebody to talk to other than your friends, because, you know, sometimes when you're telling your friends secrets, you might hear it again, but, you know, professionals are bound by the law to keep your secrets. So.
Right. Confidentiality, absolutely. And I think another thing, just culturally, what happens for a lot of people is that their religious beliefs kind of interfere with the idea of seeking services. Because you think about it, people like to say, you know, I'm going to take this to God, I'm going to pray about it, which I do believe in that myself. But sometimes we need a little bit more insight as to why what's happening is happening, because then that's where the change can come. Not that there's anything wrong with praying on something or over something, but, you know, at the end of the day, there are professional people who have been trained to deal with certain issues. And I think a lot of you know, people who are really religious have a struggle with reaching out, because it seems like you're going against whatever God's will is, and I think that's a conflict.
Well, I'm going to say this. When I first sought out counseling, I did ask the people who I was considering if they believed in God or not. So if you are a
mm-hmm.
Catholic or a Christian, whatever your religion is, you know, you have the right to say, well, do you believe in whatever it is that I believe in? And, I mean, I would recommend you get someone who has the same beliefs as you. That's what I did. I asked about two or three people, and, you know, one out of those three said that they believe in God, and I went with that person.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as a therapist myself, I always utilize, and most therapists do, if your strength is your religious beliefs and your spiritual connection, that has to be a part of that therapy. As a therapist who is mindful of what their clients are going through, there's no way you can ignore that part of somebody if that's an important part of their life. You have to figure out how to integrate into therapy, regardless of what your belief is. You know, if somebody is, you know, Muslim, and I'm not, I'm a Christian, I'm not going to, in therapy, I still may bring that in as to how they can use their own personal religion to deal with certain issues. So I think that's really important, Charity, to ask people what their beliefs are and making sure
Definitely.
That they're not under some theories that they don't want to include that. Because sometimes people don't want to talk about that because they feel like they don't go. But it's definitely, you know, each client, they're their own experts. So whatever they bring to the table, particularly if it's a strength, a good therapist will definitely use that, you know, in treatment for their benefit.
And then I wanted kind of to elaborate on, it's good to have preventive counseling also.
Yeah.
One thing that I just started with my own daughter, I sought her out counseling. I talked to her. I set her down and told her that I think she should start getting counseling because she's dating now. And one of the reasons why I encouraged her to do this is because my daughter grew up without her father in her life. And a lot of us know that in a single-parent home, you know, children will act out by not having both of their parents in life, especially their father. They may start acting out in the men that they choose to date. So before my daughter gets into, you know, dating the wrong kind of men, like a habitual dater, I felt compelled to tell her, you know, just seek out counseling so you can just deal with these issues because, you know, she was saying, well, it doesn't bother me that my father isn't in my life and I'm okay with that. But yet I overheard her when someone asked her about her father that he was dead. So, you know, a light bulb went in my head. I'm like, well, I know there's a problem there. You know, she's trying to convince me it's not bothering her, but I know better because I grew up without my father and I know how it bothered me. Even though I was willing to admit it a little bit, you know, but my daughter, she's just in complete denial. But it's okay to just get your children to have somebody to have an unbiased opinion. Because, you know, of course, if my daughter want to talk to me about her father, it may, you know, be some opinions that come up based on my feelings toward him, my personal feelings toward him, when the counselor is going to have just a neutral opinion about both sides.
Absolutely. And I really commend you for that because, you know, that's a hard thing to do for a lot of people. You know, not to just reach out for help for themselves, but for people who they love and care about because, again, some people see it as, I got this, and if I have to ask for help, that means I don't have it and I'm not being a good parent. And like you said, preventive is great. Like, you know, we, as a parent, you know your child, you know when something's happening with them, when they're red flags, or just things they may have experienced as a younger person. Things that we experience, particularly if it's any way traumatizing, will come back to visit us. We're not, even as a child, you don't just move beyond things, you know, that are traumatizing. They have to be addressed.
Definitely. I mean, every time I turn on the news or if I'm on Facebook, I see some children doing things that, you know, seems like to me, I'm not a professional, this is just my opinion, that they're acting out anger issues, things that they're holding inside that maybe that they couldn't talk to their parents or, you know, maybe their parents are in the same predicament they are, so they're not in a position to help them. So both of them would need counseling. They have family counseling, one-on-one counseling, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, they can see you alone if you need it. If the whole family needs it, then y'all should get family counseling. I mean, there's different budgets. Of course, some are expensive and some are inexpensive, but, you know, you can find anyone in your budget.
Yeah, and, you know, another thing is that, you know, you have to use the resources available to you. So, you know, if you don't have insurance, then maybe, you know, you can't go see someone that's going to be charging you $100 a session. That could be very expensive. But, you know, maybe you can start off with reaching out in your community. You know, a lot of times we have community centers that offer counseling at schools. Most of all schools provide some kind of counseling that's free of charge, you know, for a student, of course. And then, you know, in our churches, a lot of our churches, you know, we have ministers that offer counseling. I think that's a great place to start for people who are just either they don't have the budget or they're a little fearful. They want to start where they are safe. And sometimes safety is associated with, you know, familiarity. So, you know, you're familiar with your community, you're familiar with your church, you're familiar with your child's school. Those are great places to start, you know, reaching out for services. Another thing that I also recommend is that, you know, until you're ready, I always advise people sometimes to just start journaling. When you start journaling and writing your feelings and your thoughts down, and they're not to go examine the next day. You don't write something down and the next day you go read it. But over a course of time, you're able to go back and reflect and see where you are, what has changed, if I've grown. Wow, I thought that was a really major issue, you know, 2 months ago, and now, you know, I'm here, and that's like, you know, pennies in the bank. So I think journaling is also a good place to start for people who are just like, you know, I'm not ready, but I need to talk some things out.
Yeah, that's definitely true. You know, you and I being a black woman, I see all too often that, you know, black women, you know, who hold the household together, some are even doing it alone. At least about half are doing it alone, being single parents. So they want to provide this badge of strength in front of their children when really inside mm-hmm. there is such turmoil that they're dealing with, and they don't want to seem weak to their family and weak to their friends. But, you know, reaching out, because eventually you're going to be like a ticking time bomb. You're going to explode. So it's better for you to reach out and have somebody to talk to, have an outlet to get that stress off of you. You know, sometimes it makes me feel so much better just to have somebody to talk to, you know, yeah. just to relieve, to get up. Somebody just to let me vent and let all my feelings and my thoughts out.
And, you know, one thing that we had talked about earlier, too, is that, you know, once you start a trend of, you know, reaching out for services, it can be something that, you know, no one in your family is no longer afraid to do. You know, you may be the one that starts, you know, the catalyst for change for a lot of people. And, I just know it's really scary because I've seen people over the years who are really resistant to the idea. But, you know, I always say try it out that first session. If you feel like this is not for me, this is really uncomfortable, then you can walk away. It is your decision. But it, also the first person you see may not be the person that you need to see. So, you know, I think finding a good therapist is almost like finding a good mate, you know. It's not like just the first one I see is going to be the one for me. You may have to go through a few, and I know that sometimes can be scary too, but I think just like in dating, you know, you see somebody for the first time, you kind of know if there's a good vibe, you kind of know, you know, if this is a relationship that could be beneficial to you. And I think I would not go into more than one or two sessions if I had a negative feeling about a therapist. After, you know, a session or two, I would then try to find someone else. I wouldn't get too deep into, you know, the therapeutic relationship and then change, because that could be a little.
Definitely. You definitely don't want to, you know, jump on the first person. You know, it has to be a good fit. You have to feel comfortable with them. You got to feel like you can trust them, especially if they're counseling your children. You know, you want to be able to trust the people with your children. I mean, they're our prized possession. So I wouldn't just let anyone counsel my daughter or my son or myself, actually. But one thing I wanted to talk about was I see a lot of people, even women, well, especially women, that are in denial about things. They like to turn the blind eye or act like they don't see things that are really there. And, you know, don't ignore the signs. Don't ignore the signs with yourself. Don't ignore the signs with your children. Don't just chalk it up to, well, oh, he's just being bad and, you know, maybe he'll grow out of this. If you see your child is suffering from something or can't be still in class or his moods are up and down. I mean, you can't go wrong with just taking him to a counselor and getting him checked out, or a psychiatrist or a doctor. You don't want to self-diagnose yourself or your kids. You need a professional to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. Because those are also, then those become labels that kids walk around with because, you know, oh, he's just bad, or, you know, she's just fast, or, you know, those labels that we give kids, they become self-fulfilling prophecy to them, meaning that they begin to act and live those out. So we really have to be careful, and I like that you said that, Charity. We should not be diagnosing ourselves. You know, if that's not our area of expertise, we need to reach out to somebody who is.
And the best thing that I have come to know and discover about myself, which I would say is the best discovery, is self-discovery, because, I mean, it's so many things that I discovered about myself in counseling that it kind of, like, put a name to things that I have done. Like, when I think back in a day, like in high school or middle school, I could never be still or sit down, and, like, I would take things so extreme to the heart and act out. I slept a lot, but I was thinking, you know, it was because I was tired. I mean, I had children when I was young, and I was out on my own when I was young, so I was working sometimes one or two jobs. So I'm thinking, well, okay, yes, because, you know, I'm tired, but, you know, my counselor put a name to the things that I was doing, and that's how I became diagnosed with depression. He said, you've been depressed all these years. And I was like, wow, you know, that explains a lot, me sleeping all the time, keeping all the lights off in my house. And I'm thinking it's because I'm trying to conserve light. It was really a problem.
Yeah, so many, like you say, so many behaviors that we engage in that seem like just routines that are really symptoms of bigger issues. And unless you are seeking out some help or you know someone who can put a label on it, we do just become, we do just walk around and deal with it, you know? We just deal with it.
Yeah.
Or you know, I know we've all, if not our families personally, we've heard people say, oh, that's just crazy Uncle such and such. He always in the back room. You know what I mean? Like, no, that man is depressed. He needs some mental health services to figure out what's happening with him. But, you know, our families, oftentimes some of our families, they keep secrets. And then people are just not ready to uncover their own personal truth. So I think that's another phobia. It's like, if I go in here and start telling this person all these things, A, I have to acknowledge that these are the things that I've done or this is how I feel. And B, I don't know if that's really who I am. So it is a fearful process. And so it takes a really strong person to say, hey, you know, let me reach out for this help. And what I always tell parents when they bring children to me and I know they're resistant, I always say, if your child had a cold or a flu, would you not take them to the doctor? If they broke their arm, would you just say, no, we're going to just wrap it up and we'll figure it out? You know, if they were diagnosed with something severe as cancer, would you just not go through with chemo? And I think we don't look at mental health the same way, but it is a mental ailment, and it can be repaired. That's the great thing. So I think we have to look beyond the fears and really see what's in our own best interest.
Definitely. And, you know, once you let a problem fester and years and years and years go by, like if a person suffers from depression all of their life and they never get help, it can escalate to something else. Like, I had someone in my family that suffered from depression for 30 years, and then it turned into they became schizophrenic and just had a whole bunch of other diagnoses. So it's not that it's too late for them to seek out help now, but, you know, it's better to start when a person is young so you can, you know, catch it and do preventative help. And maybe by the time they get old, they can branch off not getting counseling anymore, not taking medicine anymore. You know, you don't want to wait till it just gets out of hand.
Right. And like I said, most things are, you know, manageable where you don't have to. Therapy is not long-term. It's not forever. People don't go to therapy all their lives. And sometimes when people do have extended relationships, it's because they really enjoy that relationship. I've had people who, personally, I'm admitted to, that I kept seeing, not because they had an issue, because the relationship that, you know, the client and I shared was so beneficial that neither one wanted to let go. And, I mean, that's not necessarily always good, because you as a therapist don't want to feel so good about yourself to feel like that people need you, because the whole purpose of therapy is to empower someone so they can, you know, function on their own and make decisions that they're capable of making. They're not holding some therapist's hand all their lives. But some people do just really get comfortable, and then some people get greedy and they want to keep billing people. But therapy is not meant to be long-term forever, you know. Depending on the issue will dictate what's the appropriate, you know, amount of time somebody should be seen.
Definitely. And like the saying goes, you can't teach your old dog new tricks. You know, we have our youth that we have to take responsibility for. And you see all the time on the news young kids that are dealing with peer pressure, committing suicide, you know, all types of stuff that they're dealing with on the outside of their home. You know, some may be teaching their children right, but, you know, the outside influence, they're out of your home probably majority of the day. So it's good to just get your children counseling to deal with, you know, like for a long time. I know a few young ladies that were virgins during school, and they had other friends that weren't virgins, so then they started having sex, which is kind of like an adult thing to be dealing with. Of course they should seek counseling. They're dealing with, you know, grown-up issues. They need somebody to talk to. They need some guidance, and not just, you know, how once a person could just beat a child on the head with, no, that's just wrong, you shouldn't be doing that, especially if they use religion, saying, oh, you shouldn't have sex until you're married. You know, you're just beating them with this, but you're not just really sitting there and listening to them and getting, you know, their feelings and their thoughts, because believe me, no matter what we teach them, they have their own thoughts. They have their own feelings.
Absolutely.
About things. And they are listening to their friends.
Oh, yeah. That is their peer group of the majority. That's who they're going to listen to. You know, when children are 5 and 6, their parents are, you know, they are the people who they seek out and they want approval from. But as they get older, you know, when they transition into teenagers, then the peer group is who they are seeking approval and who they're getting all that information from, and we know it's all wrong. And I agree, as kids transition to adolescence, I think that's one of the toughest times in anybody's life. If we look back on our own personal life, I'll say my teenage years were the roughest. We're trying to figure out who we are, who we belong to, who we want to affiliate with, and that's just oftentimes a really tough time, not to mention whatever other family issues you may have going on that exacerbate, you know, your experience. So I would suggest for any parent, you know, when your child is 13 transitioning to high school, it's not a bad thing to say, hey, let me get you somebody to talk to, or even if there has to be somebody in your family who they can, you know, who they feel close or connected to. But teenagers need that adult listening ear that's not going to be judgmental, that's not their parent, that can really help them figure out things.
And believe me, our children are watching us. We have to lead by example. If you're doing something, if you got some things going on with yourself, because believe me, people noticing it, your children are noticing it, and you step out there and you reach out for help and you admit that you need some help, your children will be prone to do the same thing. We have to be good examples for our children, not just our children, but other people's children that may be looking at you. Because one thing about my daughter, she has a group of friends. They always come to me and her to talk to us about stuff that I was like, well, you know, I was telling Kayla, I was like, Kayla, they should be talking to this about their own parents. Questions that they were asking me, things that they were asking my daughter to do. I was so surprised and kind of caught off guard at times. But, you know, it just made me realize that those children didn't feel comfortable talking to their parents. So,
right.
And that's another main reason why you should get them counseling, because what they won't talk to you about, they'll talk to a stranger about.
Mm-hmm. And get the wrong advice. So, you know, we just wanted to take this opportunity to kind of share and discuss these phobias, and I'm sure our listeners can completely identify with some of these fears. And we really want people to step out, you know, step out of your comfort zone, you know. If we never step out of that comfort zone, we're never going to reach our maximum potential or even overcome fears that we have. So from us to you all, you know, seek out services if you need it. And like I suggested, if you have insurance, and even if it's state insurance or if it's private insurance, there's an 800 number on the back of that card, and all you do is call them, and they will send you a list of people who are in your area that you can outreach to. Start there or in your community at the places that we talked about earlier, church, school, and community centers.
All right. Well, do we have a caller coming in? No? Well, we're going to wrap this up. We appreciate everyone for tuning in. And always know, if no one else believes in you, God believes in you and believe in yourself. Thank you.
Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll see you next Monday.
hold it up.